Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
The number 5347 sticks in my mind. You go back to the impeachment, virtually every amendment went down 5347. And, you know, it's that moment that I started going, you know what, something needs to happen in the Senate to change that number. And you may remember back in May of last year, Senator Mike Enzi announced that he was retiring. And I'm like, hey, here's an opportunity, open seat, possible pickup in the state of Wyoming. Wouldn't that be great? It'd be pretty incredible if we did. That's why I've asked Yana Ludwig to come talk with us. She is running for that open seat as a Democrat in the state of Wyoming. Yana, thanks for taking time for us.
Oh, thanks for having me, Rick.
So I understand Enzi's out. Again, not one of my favorite senators. Glad to see him go. Possibility for a pickup?
Well, we think so. I mean, it's an interesting thing. We actually think that we have the numbers if we can get out the vote, mostly because young people have traditionally not voted much in the state of Wyoming, and also, you know, having somebody, the first candidate ever to run for a statewide office who is part of the LGBTQ community, is creating some excitement for those folks. So, yeah, so let's see what we can do.
No, I mean, at the end of it, you know, there's an energy going across this country, and I think a lot of it has to do with Bernie Sanders. And you know, I talk to people all the time, and now look, there's some Twitter trolls who are pain in the neck, but I talk to people all the time who are, you know, they've got that hope and change thing idea that we had with Obama, but in a different way, that this is going to be, in Sanders and people who support him, an opportunity to rebuild the working class and an opportunity, you know, to re-energize that American dream.
Yeah, I think so for sure. And, you know, I have a lot of hope when I see that there really is a multiracial working class, you know, rise that's happening in politics in the U.S. You know, I have a lot of hope when I see people like AOC and, you know, Bernie Sanders himself and Cory Booker and Julian Castro and Rashida Tlaib and Ilhan Omar. I mean, there's a whole bunch of people that, I mean, what it feels to me like we're seeing is a kind of slow motion change almost in the DNA of political power in Washington. And it feels like it's being rewritten by the working class right now. And it's just at that front edge. But it gives me hope that, you know, as, you know, the bisexual daughter of an oncologist with a chronic illness, it's like, well, maybe I might be able to actually bring my whole self to Washington as well. And I think people are much more open to having politicians that don't fit sort of an old style cookie cutter kind of thing. And that's true even in a state like Wyoming.
Yeah, male, pale, and stale with a huge bank account.
Yeah. Yep, that's pretty much it. Although my, you know, the main opponent that we have on the Republican side is not male, but is not great.
Yeah. So let me ask you the question I ask everyone, because, you know, this is a huge undertaking. You run for any political office, but especially when you're talking about Congress or the U.S. Senate, it is a huge undertaking. It is a life-changing undertaking. Why do you want to put yourself through this?
Well, I think for me, you know, my three main issues in this campaign are economic security, climate disruption, and human rights. And obviously, all of those are very critical at this particular moment. And I think for me, though, I wouldn't have actually gotten out of my comfort zone and a life that I really love and sort of stepped into this domain if it wasn't for a really deep sense of urgency around climate issues. And my belief is that the United States Senate is the primary bottleneck in global progress on that issue. And so I might not have done it, except that I really feel like the people who get elected in this next cycle we're kind of at a make or break point. And I wasn't really sure if I could live with myself if I didn't try. And this Senate race, in a lot of ways, is kind of my personal Hail Mary pass for my kids to have a livable future and one that is based on sustainability and justice rather than just being survivable. And so that's why I waited in there.
No, you know, I hear that a lot, that, you know, it's either the climate, it's either the economy or the other one, which is obviously the menace that's in the White House right now. So it fits right into one of those molds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I feel like they're all deeply connected to each other.
Yeah, everything seems to be connected,
really,
doesn't it?
Issues. Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Now, as you point out in your website, and if folks want to check out the website, it's Yana, the number four, WYO.com. We'll get links out so folks can take a look at it. You said that everything that comes before you, every decision that you make, every piece of legislation that would come before you, you would look at through three different frames. You know, how is it going to affect the security for working people? You know, how is it going to affect human and civil rights? And then, obviously, the climate. And, all three of those things all are intertwined together. And I think we need to be talking about everything in those lights.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And, for me, in a lot of ways, I think that the economy is what is driving the climate crisis. In a late stage capitalism situation, profit is what drives hyperconsumption, and hyperconsumption is what is driving the United States being one of the biggest contributors to the climate crisis in the world. And so, I feel like we can't really unhook what's happening with the climate until we're willing to actually take a look at the economy and, try to figure out how to get that beast under control.
So let me ask you about that, because I hear a lot of people saying, you on the left, you basically just want to stop everything. So everyone's just standing around and looking at each other. You're so anti-business. and I'm sure you've heard it too. Order to save the planet, we can't have our consumption-based economy, and that no one's going to buy anything and no one's going to work and it's all going to be horrible. Or the other option is we continue to consume and eventually, our grandchildren die off a bunch of years early. Do you fit into either of those pegs?
I don't really. I mean, I think that, we had trade and we had markets before we got into neoliberal capitalism and before we got into this kind of, on overdrive state that we're in right now. And so, for me, I think a lot of it is, if you think about like where the profit from that hyper consumption goes to, it's really going to like massive CEO salaries. I mean, yep. CEOs make about 360 times what the average worker makes. And all of that, you have to sell a lot of shit to get to that point. And so, I think if we moved toward an economy that was, I am a socialist, I identify that way, but the part of socialism that I identify with the most strongly is worker ownership. And, we could be working a lot fewer hours and pushing a lot less profit and actually making more money if the standard in our economy was worker ownership instead of 1% ownership, where, you have to produce so much just to keep those people in their 16th yacht or whatever,
Yeah.
And so I think if we could back away from that, I think that actually, for me, that's one of the key pins. I think there's also, ending fossil fuel subsidies and moving toward, green energy and, which is not without its problems as well, but is definitely not the kind of beast that the fossil fuel industry is. And, moving, moving back towards small and sustainable farming instead of these big mega farms and, the mass amount of food wastage that we have in this country. I mean, there's a whole bunch of different things that are sort of, key points. And addressing those doesn't necessarily mean that we're going to be, living lives of deprivation.
No, you're absolutely right. And I would throw in there the concept of planned obsolescence. Start making
absolutely
things that last. I mean, it's insane to
me. Yeah, and yeah, and that was very deliberate. I think it was like 1953 that concept was like deliberately inserted into economic thinking, and it's been a disaster for the planet.
No, I mean, we buy stuff just to last for us to go, oh, we got something. Oh, look how wonderful. Oh, it broke. I got to throw away and buy another one.
Yep.
And that's got to stop. I mean, we bought a washer and dryer several years ago, and the guy said, don't plan on it lasting more than 7 or 8 years. And I'm going, but the one I just had, I had for 25.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, yep, they're planning, shorter and shorter. And that's all into the, you've got these capitalists who are at the top and who say, hey, there's more money in people buying stuff than fixing it.
Yep. Yeah. And it's interesting, actually. And I don't know the details about this, but there are actually some regulations on the books that prevent farmers from being able to fix their own tractors in some cases.
Oh, no, that's not legislation. That's not legislation. That's John Deere saying, if you buy our stuff, it's proprietary.
Okay.
It's proprietary. You can have no one work on it, and they actually hold the the patents on all this stuff. It's these companies
right.
that have said it'll void your warranties and all kinds of draconian stuff. And also you look at Monsanto with their seeds and the all that stuff. It's insane
right.
what we've allowed these
right.
companies to get away with.
Yeah, patent law is pretty problematic. you look at it from like an ecological standpoint and a like people survival standpoint. There's a bunch of stuff in there that we need to get in there and tweak.
Yeah, I mean, you heard during the whole talk with China, we need intellectual property rights, and I'm going, yeah, to a point. But if you're dumb enough to go to China and allow them to steal your and give away your intellectual property, you deserve to be ripped off. Just kind of my thought. But let's get this back on track because, I want to talk about you and what you're seeing as you're out there shaking hands and kissing babies and doing all of that stuff. What are the people in your state saying are the most important issues to them right now?
Well, I think that healthcare is really huge. I mean, I live in the most rural states in the country, and rural hospitals and, rural medical infrastructure is in generally very bad shape. And then even people who have good insurance are not actually being able to get the care that they need to get. And so I think that that's a big issue. And I'm going to take a moment to just pitch Medicare for All here for a sec, if you don't mind. I think that in order for any kind of guaranteed health coverage to actually work, we have got to get rid of private insurance. I mean, there's all this talk about how we're going to pay for it, and yet 30% of what we count as healthcare costs in America are actually the cost of private insurance. And we're literally paying companies to be gatekeepers to tell us we can't go to the doctor. And yep. there's literally no inherent value in private insurance, and it is constantly abused in the name of profit. I heard a really horrifying story a couple weeks ago of a woman who went into labor early, and her husband actually was in a job because of good insurance, and that good insurance company declared their child a pre-existing condition, and they got stuck with tens of thousands of dollars in bills, and they had good insurance.
How's that possible under the ACA that supposedly did away with pre-existing conditions?
Well, I don't know. I mean, they had private insurance. They weren't covered through the ACA. So, I'm not actually sure how that works, but they're in a court case at this point about it.
And, yeah, of course.
But
that's horrible. Isn't that horrible that
stuff,
that would even come
it's
up?
It's terrible. I mean, you hear horror story after horror story after horror story, and it is absolutely hitting people in Wyoming. And so, my thing is, tax the rich, eliminate that 30%. Which would also eliminate a ton of labor. Like, doctor's offices have to have dedicated staff basically just for dealing with complicated multi-source billing and arguing with insurance companies. Put a hard cap on drug prices to end that price gouging that's happening. And we'd actually have a much smaller nugget to find the money for. So I'm totally down with Medicare for All, and it's a big issue for people in my state.
Right. So let me ask you the next question that comes with that, because I'm a Medicare for All guy as well. I think we have to have one giant insurance pool. I mean, just from insurance pooling, having one giant pool where everybody's in, the rich, the poor, the young, the old, the sick, the healthy, everybody into it, and that fund pays out for everyone. And at some point down the road, if you're healthy now, you're going to get sick down the road, so that it follows you cradle to grave, so that we then enact policies that keep you well as you're younger, so that maybe when you're older, you'll be well as well. I'm in favor of that. The question I have for you, are you then in favor of saying, okay, well, we've got a one single entity that's handling the payments? Do you believe in government ownership of the hospitals and the doctors and all that stuff, like a true universal system as opposed to just a single payer system?
I don't really. I mean, I think that having, some amount of public hospitals is a good thing in places like Wyoming, where it's, it is hard to have a private practice that lasts. And so I think that I'm actually okay with the mix that we have right now in terms of our service providers. And I don't think that that's where the really problematic stuff is in the healthcare system. Now, ask me in 10 years, once we've got Medicare for All for a while, and I might realize that answer was naive in some ways. But at this point, I'm not actually seeing the need
No, I'm with you. No, I'm not in favor of public ownership of the doctors and all the facilities. I do believe that we should have publicly funded hospitals. We used to have community hospitals that the tax base funded. And I'm not against going back in that direction, but just to have a universal system that the doctors and the hospitals are owned by the government, I'm not thrilled with that. So I just wanted to see where
I'm
you were, because a lot of people will say, a lot of people will say that, you know, Yana, you said you're a socialist. So how far does that go? That was kind of the question.
I would be in favor of turning the pharmaceutical industry into public utilities. I mean, I would be down with having that conversation and trying to figure out what makes sense with that, because that's actually where, like, the worst CEO to worker pay ratios are in the pharmaceutical companies. You know, you hear these stories about, like, they're charging us 10 times as much as they are people just over the border into Canada. And so part of me feels like that industry has kind of lost the right to continue to abuse us. And so I would be interested in that conversation. And I'm not convinced that's the right answer, but I want us to talk about it and to figure out what really does make sense to do with the pharmaceutical industry.
See, I could end the outrageous CEO salaries tomorrow if I had a magic wand. I'd do two things.
Well, you know, one of the things...
I'd give workers the ability to organize and fight for better wages, hours, and conditions. And I would fight for a progressive tax code like we had during the socialist presidency of Dwight David Eisenhower.
Well, and I'll take it one step further. I agree with both of those things. And one of the things that I am proposing is a wage ratio law. So this is something that has gotten started in the worker cooperative world and in some of the more like social justice oriented nonprofits in the country, where the highest paid person within that organization can't make more than X times the lowest paid person in the organization. And it's an interesting mix of sort of socialist and capitalist approaches to things, because it says, like, hey, if you're that much of hot shit and you want to be making $10 million, $20 million a year, that's fine, but you have to bring everybody else in the company up with you in the process. And what I would recommend is that we look at a wage ratio of about 20 to 1, which is very different than we have right now, but it's about what we had in the 1950s when we also had, you know, a strong and growing labor movement, and where a middle-class income, like a single middle-class income, could actually get you a house and a car and college for your kids and all that kind of stuff. And so that's one of my more radical things that I'm interested in us looking at.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I think it wouldn't say that you couldn't make that money. It would just say you're going to have to figure out how to pay your janitor and your secretary much better than you are right now in order to make that money. Go for it.
Yeah, no, that's where like I said, I think the two things that I said were what happened in the 1950s. You had the Eisenhower tax code that you go ahead, make as much money as you want. We're just going to tax the hell out of you and take it anyway. And you had a strong labor movement that you had to sit across the table from and justify you taking 1,000 times what the average worker's making and then trying to deny them a nickel raise. I would love to be part of that. So last little question I've got for you, you know, as you're looking at the issues in front of you, what's that one issue that Jana Ludwig goes, you know, this is the hill I die on?
Oh, my gosh. Just one hill. I think it's climate and having a Green New Deal like the one that Bernie Sanders has proposed that is very tuned into racial justice, very tuned into economic justice, and is working both ends of the deal. I mean, it's not just about cutting emissions, but it's also about, you know, things like, you know, planting trees, getting back to agriculture that makes more sense, that kind of stuff. So a really holistic Green New Deal, that's probably the hill I die on.
All right, good stuff. But did you know that Donald Trump said he's going to plant a trillion trees?
Well, that's what the scientists say we need to do. I would be shocked if Donald Trump actually follows through on any of that.
I'm right there with you. Jana Ludwig, I appreciate the time. Really great talking with you. I wish you the best as you run for Senate out there in the great state of Wyoming. Thanks so much for taking time for us.
All right. Thank you, Rick. I appreciate it.
Good stuff. I hope folks will check out her website, Jana, the number 4WYO.com, Jana for Wyoming. We'll get links out so folks can take a look at it. Quick break, right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1941. That was the day a general strike by workers against